I am speaking with Camille Howard, who is a director. She's a devised theater maker, a writer, a filmmaker, and she is here in Pittsburgh to direct The Passion of Mary Cardwell Dawson. Were you familiar with Mary Cardwell Dawson before coming here?
Well, before I first worked on the production in the summer of 2021 at Glimmerglass, I had no idea who she was, or the National Negro Opera Company. I'd never heard of either.
I know. I think we're even surprised here, and now there's lots of funding and things are happening with the home and all sorts. So you were originally a part of the whole experience at Glimmerglass.
Yes, this is my fifth production.
Oh my gosh, that's great. So how has it evolved over these different productions?
Well, the first production, we only had, I think it was four Carmen songs. The Seguidilla, the Habanera, we had four Carmen songs and one Carlos Simon song at the end, and a little bit of L'Abbiamo at the beginning. And then it was determined when we had done that outdoors on a stage the set that was shared with all the other productions in the season. So while the play is set in a rehearsal studio, there were trees on stage because of one of the other operas in the season. So the second time we actually got to do it indoors in the summer of 2022. So that was a big step in the evolution of the piece. And you could actually hear the storm. Like in outside, it was really difficult to distinguish the rain from the wind. So like the only thing that helped support the sound of the storm would be the lightning flashes. So indoors we had lighting, we had clear sound cues, and Carlos Simon wrote two new songs for the piece. So we opened with the Carlos Simon song, and then in the middle of the piece there's another song, and then we end with one as well. And L'Abbiamo went away.
So it's a piece that has really gone through a journey, as all sort of newer pieces sort of go through a whole changing of the guard and everything. But so here we are with the fifth iteration. Do you feel like you're settled on the story and what's happening?
I mean, the main goalposts and the main key elements of the piece are always clear, but I mean, working with different artists in each iteration, there's always new discoveries, and also depending on how much time we have in rehearsal, there's more time to play and explore. And you know, different actors or singers bring different choices. So this is our third version of our Frank, and I think our third Phoebe. Our third Isabel, or maybe our fourth Phoebe. But anyway, they all bring something different, different choices, different reactions. And so it's always a little bit changed each mm-hmm. time.
So it's a play with music, because there is dialogue, correct?
Yes, it is a play with several classical pieces.
Okay. So what is your goal here? What do you want to show Pittsburgh audiences with this piece?
Well, I think because the National Negro Opera Company called Pittsburgh its home, I think it's important that we introduce the history to the Pittsburgh community. I mean, to your point about how you said you hadn't heard of them, I imagine many people in Pittsburgh didn't learn about them. I mean, they are clearly not in the history books. So I'm hoping to shed light on this important part of classical and Black and American history, and also hopefully inspire people to do more of their own research on the history of these important people and support the house as it continues in renovations. And I know there are plans for it to be in use again for music and support of the arts.
You know, I think people are surprised sometimes with the history of music, because we have the Hill District and the jazz that was here, and the fact that the National Negro Opera House was here. And it's a city that continues with great music and also a really great African-American community. And so I hope this appeals to people who normally wouldn't come to see maybe an opera.
Yeah, a few production experiences where audience members were new to opera have come forward and said that they didn't know that opera could be like this in terms of seeing people of color singing and embodying these characters. And it is definitely piqued their curiosity and interest in coming back for more. So that is also an important part of this production that I hope happens here as well, that it can be a gateway to the classical world for new audience members.
So how many people are in the cast?
There are 5 people in the cast. We have our Mary Cardwell Dawson, we have our 3 singers that she's rehearsing with, and we have our pianist.
Has Allison done the role of MCD before?
Yes, she was our MCD the summer of 2022 at Glimmerglass when we did it indoors for the first time. And then she came to WNO and was a cover for Denise when she came on for that production. And so this will be, in a sense, her 3rd production.
And I believe Denise is coming in to do sort of a talk, and because I know she's been a supporter of the house and putting her name behind it. And I think she's doing a talk and possibly a concert.
Right. I believe that's happening next week. I think on Tuesday there's an event happening where she's going to be speaking with the community about her Denise Graves Foundation and the Mary Cardwell Dawson history and her house and her Denise's discovery of MCD and the genesis of the piece.
Camille, before you started working on this piece, were you familiar with opera, or was this sort of a new experience for you?
No, it wasn't a new experience for me. My real introduction into opera was in 2013, I was an intern at the Heer Art Center in New York, and that was the first year that they did the Prototype Festival, which is a new works opera festival. I worked that festival almost every year leading up to lockdown. Since then, I just loved working that festival and being exposed to these new operas and being in that world. And actually, the first grand opera I ever saw was actually that year. It was Powder Her Face at BAM, which was shocking to me because if you know anything about that opera, it is chock full of debauchery. And there's a scene where there's 25 naked men on stage. And I was like, oh, wow, I did not know that this is what opera could be. And then when I was a directing producing intern at MacArthur Theater in the 2015-16 season, I assisted Stephen Wadsworth on a play called The Comedy of Tenors, which is about the opera world. So there was a lot of opera music in it. And Stephen Wadsworth is the head of the opera program at Juilliard. And he became sort of like a mentor to me in a way. And in a couple of years later, a colleague that I met through Stephen recommended me to the Met, and they reached out to me and asked if I would be interested in being an assistant stage director on Porgy and Bess. And so I worked on the 2019 production that Jim Robinson directed, and I've been assistant stage directing at the Met since. And post-lockdown is when I really started to direct my own productions of opera.
And also, in a very operatic sense, Sweeney Todd, you're the winner of the 2023 Opera America's Robert L. B. Tobin Director Designer Prize, so that must be pretty exciting.
Oh yeah, that was really fun to do, to get a team of designer friends together and conceptualize a piece that lives in the classical world and the musical theater world. And we conjured up a dream cast, and we thought of limitless budget concept of our Sweeney Todd. And then this was our second attempt at applying for this. So the second time getting that prize, that was really exciting. And getting to go to the Opera America conference, which I had never been to a conference before. And I was this is amazing. And it's nice way to meet so many different people in the industry who are spread out all over the country and perhaps the world. And it was a great opportunity to introduce myself to many of them.
So you have quite a history now with newer contemporary operatic works. Is that your hope someday of course you've been, you worked with Porgy and Bess, but any of the other bigger grand operas like Aida or Trovatore, any interest in guiding those?
Oh, absolutely. Well, one of the first, well, the first opera that I ever staged was at Wolfstrap Opera, and that was The Anonymous Lover, which doesn't fall under the standard rep canon, but it is definitely from that era. He was a contemporary of Mozart, and that was amazing. That I loved working on that piece, and I love Mozart pieces, so opera. So I would, I mean, The Magic Flute has been on my bucket list for years, and I did The Italian Girl out in Tulsa. So that was a big one, and I love comedies. I don't often get to do them, so I'm like eager to get more comedies on my.
You're in the opera world, there is no comedy. Oh, it's harder to find comedy in the opera world than sort of tragedy. But the Mary Dawson actually has a happy ending, doesn't it?
It has an ambiguous happy ending, I think. You know, I don't want to spoil anything, but okay. I think. The way that it ends leaves it up to interpretation for the audience to imagine what happens next. We don't answer all the questions we ask. We leave them with some questions.
Okay.
But yes.
Okay. Well.
Hopeful questions. Okay.
No, I mean the ending is hopeful, but doesn't give you a finality.
Yeah. Camille Howard, thank you so much directing this wonderful piece, The Passion of Mary Cardwell Dawson. We look forward to the production.
Thank you so much. We look forward to seeing you at the theater.